I'm Zach.
And I'm Josh.
And this is Lamp Stomp, a Pixar podcast.
Zach, we're back.
Dude, okay. First off, sorry. Second off, it's been over a month since we've talked about a Pixar movie, and that is just not okay. One, because we have a podcast and we should be more accountable for when we put these things out. But yeah. Two, I just miss talking about Pixar movies, and so that is a huge bummer. But hey, we're back. We'll probably do some catching up, and that just means we get to watch more Pixar movies faster now, and they'll get the podcast faster now. It was just a little September break. We were taking the Green Day "Wake Me Up When September Ends" break.
I like that approach. That's great. Definitely doesn't have anything to do with all the craziness in our life.
No.
Just we were trying to follow Green Day's advice. Zach, I got a question for you.
All right, man. What are we talking about today?
Yeah, my question for you is what movie are we talking about? And then I'll get into a different question I have for you.
Today we are talking about Pixar's third sequel. Is that right?
I was like, where are you going with this? Because we're near the end the second half of this.
Fourth sequel, right? Toy Story had a sequel. Monsters had a sequel, Cars had a sequel, so this is Pixar's fourth sequel.
Yes.
So Finding Dory.
Toys, Monsters, Cars, that's what we've...
Yep, and then...
Yeah. And then... So, Zach, we're in Finding Dory.
Yeah.
I got a question for you.
All right.
Do you ever have, like, the feeling like you're just like Dory?
In what way?
I think we all do, and you'll understand what I'm saying in a second. The other day, I was trying to grab a pair of socks, and I walked into my bedroom, and I just started like talking to Hunter, and then I grabbed something and walked out, and I was like, oh, man, I completely forgot to grab a pair of socks, so I walked back in. And I saw something else that I needed, and I grabbed that, and I walked out, and then I walked back, and I was like, I forgot socks again.
All right.
And I was like, I swear, every time I walk into that room, I just forget why I walked into that room.
If you put it like that, then 100% undeniably, yes.
Did I forget again? I think we've all been there like that.
For sure. The worst is when you go in a room and you're like, why did I come in here? And you have to like think through why you're in there in the first place.
Why do I exist? What is the meaning of life? Oh yeah, I just needed some socks. That's right. I forgot.
then certainly we probably all have a little Dory in us. So why don't we move on to our Remember Me.
All right, Zach, Finding Dory opens with a cute little baby Dory talking to her parents and introducing herself, saying, I have short-term memory loss. And that's good. They've
remember, trained her from the beginning. How does she say it? Sure, she says memory or something like that? She has short-term
memory. I think she says it differently most times. Remembering loss. It's cute. It's adorable. It baby Dory.
Baby Dory is adorable.
We see the giant-eyed baby Dory several times. And I don't know why we actually don't, why that is not something that has like stuck in pop culture. Like, I don't know why that's not like a stuffed animal that every kid has. Cause that is an adorable fish.
Because when you think about it, what is like one of the most popular things right now? Baby Yoda.
Yeah.
Equally as cute, you know, like, and so I think it was just,
you'd think that this would have taken off. Yeah, I don't know. Back to the story. We got to a very sad lost baby Dory montage. She's wandering around the ocean trying to find her family. And as she grows, we end with the montage of her meeting Marlin. So the boat driving overhead and then her crashing into Marlin. And that was the end of the montage. Just slowly, she's introducing herself to other fish, saying, "Hi, I'm lost. Can you help me find my family? Hi, I'm lost. I can't really remember what I was doing. You want to help me? Hi, I'm Dory." That's all. And so we just see this montage. I do really like how they did growing. That. Yeah. I love crossover how they got feelings. To and so they
Nemo, yeah.
They end with
or to Marlin.
That and it does really set this feeling up immediately of her just feeling lost. Like
right.
They created this growth and story, origin story for Dory that was perfect. She's very clearly wandering and doesn't even know why she's wandering. Sorry, I'll get back into the story. We'll break it down. Nemo is going to school and Dory has a flashback childhood, which unlocks some memories of her parents. So she sees the undercurrent, I think, and something that Nemo says like causes her to suddenly remember something about her parents, and she freaks out. She's like, "I've got to get back to my parents. I have to find them. I remember them. I need to find them."
The jewel of Morro Bay, so California.
She talks. Yeah, she doesn't quite stick as well as the other one, but I did remember that it was in California. But she talks Marlin into another cross ocean adventure, and they all join up. And the first place they go is to be with the sea turtles, which is the sea turtles just ride around the ocean equivalent of an interstate. And they find themselves when they leave the sea turtles in this wrecked ship, and they find themselves being chased by a squid in a scene that is eerily similar to the Bruce and shark scene from the first movie, where Marlin acts eerily similar to himself in the shark and Bruce scene from the first movie. They escape. But Marlin is very frustrated at Dory, doesn't trust her, and says, "Why don't you just go sit over there and forget? It's what you're best at." Yes. And so Dory kind of finds herself wandering around. She's got one of those six-pack can things around her. It's clearly not inhibiting her, but the Marine Life Institute sure seems to think so. And they grab her out of the water, and Marlin's like, "Not again!" And she is taken by the Marine Life Institute because they think that she's trapped in this piece of trash and they're trying to rescue her. So they take her, and inside of the Marine Life Institute in quarantine, which is a word that has become very desensitized to us over the past year. She is in quarantine where she meets Hank, our friendly septopus, octopus who lost his tentacle. So come back later, and I shouldn't derail this story again, but I don't remember him saying specifically how he lost that tentacle. Do you remember?
I don't think so.
Okay, so good. Well, glad I'm not the only one. Anyways, we meet Hank, and Hank's trying to steal Dory's transport tag because he wants to go to Cleveland to an aquarium. And that's where fishing routine or tagged fish are going, and he didn't receive a tag. So he's trying to make his way to Cleveland, and we don't really even understand what Cleveland is all that much. We don't understand why he wants to get there yet, but we will. So there is some misunderstandings and some craziness in the transportation, and Dory ends up in a fish, in a bucket of dead fish, and she's almost fed to Destiny, the whale shark, who we learn was actually a friend of hers. They used to talk through the pipes back when Dory and her parents lived the Marine Life Institute. Yeah, they were pipe pals, which I have questions about, but we'll get into later. Then she and Hank, Hank eventually gets to her at Destiny's exhibit. And they realize, "I need to get to the open ocean exhibit." But that's across the entire institute. It's nowhere near us. So she and Hank devised this plot where she is the eyes and ears of this stroller, and Hank is in the stroller pushing it along, and they're pretty much just trying to like blend in with the crowd, this stray stroller. They do a pretty good job of it for a while. Marlin, meanwhile, we jump back to Marlin and Nemo, who are trying to rescue Dory, and they come across these sea lions who are able to help them figure out a way to get into the Marine Life Institute by being carried in a bucket by, no idea what type of bird it is, but named Becky. Do you have any idea what type of bird that is?
No, probably just
like a deranged, like half rabbit, like half brilliant
something.
Yeah, it looks like a really weird, like rabid pigeon in my mind.
But there were other
ones. Don't understand it. Yeah, they see pigeons later and they don't look the same. I don't know.
But weird, there was, no, weird when Becky first comes in, there were others just like her, just not like disheveled and weird looking.
True. I don't know. Didn't quite catch it. Anyways, Becky is carrying Marlin, and Marlin continues to not trust anyone, which will be a theme throughout this movie. And Hank and Dory find themselves place that they least wanted to be. So Dory
So Becky is a loon. That's what type of bird it is.
She's supposed to look crazy.
It's a good name for it, isn't loon. It?
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay. So she's a loon. Never even heard of or seen that, but maybe they're common in California. Sure. I don't know. So Dory are traveling around, and Dory does her typical forgetfulness self. And accidentally she recognizes a sign, and instead of going back to the ocean exhibit, she finds herself in the sea otter exhibit because she saw a sign that she recognized and she wanted to follow it. And they end up in the sea lion exhibit. Some hijinks ensue, and Hank and Dory are both launched into the kids oni. And when they are trapped in kid zone grab section, which is seems like I don't understand why there were so many I'm blanking on the name of them. There's so many spiky things in this kids grab zone that it's ridiculous. Do you know what those are called?
I know what you're talking about, but I can't think of what they're called.
That's going to come up with the wrong thing. Okay, I don't know. There's so many of them, and it's ridiculous because kids are just throwing their hands in there like they're bombs. So Hank is terrified of getting grabbed, and it was either at this point or slightly earlier where he was like, I refuse to go to the kids zone. We cannot end up in the kids zone. I'm not going to lose another tentacle. So it's kind of like hinted that like a kid grabbed his tentacle and pulled it off.
Yeah, that's what I just read.
He's also terrified.
There's nothing, the movie never says what happened, but that's what we're led to believe is what this article said.
I was thinking, but it's also weird because he doesn't want to go to the ocean, which leads me to believe, and he's at the Marine Life Institute, so that he would have been taken from the ocean. So it leads me to think that maybe he had it lost in the ocean. Yeah. That's what I think is more likely, but I don't know. It's not told why. So it makes you believe that it was So anyways, that's important for this specific scene. He is terrified of getting grabbed, and he's hiding, and Dory is hiding with him, and she remembers that her parents taught her the Just Keep Swimming song. And so she's like, I got this. We're just going to just keep swimming. So they just keep swimming, and it doesn't really work the way that she thinks, but it does work because they end up in the poke zone, I guess, and a kid pokes Hank right on the head, and Hank squirts ink everywhere, which he was already scared. I think that the ink should have happened earlier, but the fact that it happens at all, it makes sense, and it scares all the kids away because they're like, oh my goodness, this water is black, and it does exactly what an octopus squirting is supposed to do. It just scares away and makes them invisible. So because all the kids run away, they're able to escape from the kids zone. And Hank in this moment has a growth moment that is eerily similar to Marlin's from the first movie, where he's like, wow, Dory, you got us out of there. Like, I couldn't do it and you did it. And he trusts Dory because Dory is more capable than anyone ever seems to think. So they end up making it into like the just above the open ocean exhibit. And she is, and Hank drops Dory into the ocean exhibit. There's this beautiful scene where she's watching all the fish swim around. And she eventually finds her way back to what was her previous home. And she remembers that the way that she ended up getting pulled out was she was sucked through the pipes out into the ocean. And that leads her to feel like guilty and upset that she's the reason that she, that her family was broken up. And she's, because she didn't do what she was told. And she's got a lot of guilt from that. And through talking to a couple of other people, we learned that all of the fish of her type are actually tagged and in quarantine because they're all about to go to Cleveland. And so that actually makes more sense. I wasn't really sure why she was tagged in the first place. And it makes sense because all of the other fish just like her are going to leaving. Cleveland. Yeah, that so that's sense. why she was tagged and why she was pulled out and or not put into the open ocean exhibit in the first place. So she is terrified of going through the pipes because she knows she's going to forget while she's in there, and then she's going to be lost and no one's going to be able to help her. So she goes in, and while she's in there, she gets lost and she calls out for help, and Destiny and Bailey hear her through the pipes, and Bailey relearns and is able to spark his echolocation and is able to spot Dory in the pipes and help Dory escape. But there is this misunderstanding where Marlin and Nemo have been swimming through the pipes. I actually forgot to get from Marlin and Nemo in like the fish tank exhibit into the pipes, but it's not super relevant to the story. No. Anyways, echolocation is dumb in my opinion and super inaccurate, but we'll keep moving on from that. I just needed to say it.
Hilarious
for sure. And so Bailey and Destiny think that Marlin and Nemo are a bigger fish coming to eat Dory, and when they're all hugging and happy and excited, all that Bailey can see is what looks like Dory being eaten alive, and they're terrified and sad and scared. And then they're like, no, don't worry. It's just my friends. So they eventually find their way to quarantine. So Hank, they find their way into the fish that are all her type. I don't remember what type that is. And she's trying to find her parents and come to find out that they are not in there. So very last second, Hank scoops Dory out because they were trying not to end up going to Cleveland, and this tank of the other fish is going to Cleveland, but Hank is unable to successfully scoop her, Nemo, and Marlin, drops her, and he tries his best not to get caught, but he gets caught, and she flows with the water from the glass that she was in down into a tank and finds herself out in the ocean. And so wandering kind of through the ocean, we see her doing what she does, where she just asks random strangers for help, and they don't really know how to help her because she doesn't really know how to ask for help. She doesn't really know what she needs help with. But she does end up finding some seashells, and she follows the seashells all the way back to her parents. We find her parents who have been waiting outside of the Marine Life Institute, knowing that one day she'll come back, and they've been laying out seashells so that way she could follow them back. It's this beautiful, wonderful moment, but she's like, I have to go back and get Marlin and Nemo. They're more than just friends. They're my family. We have to go get them. And so they swim back, and we have Destiny and Bailey launch themselves out of the Marine Life Institute into the ocean to come join, and all three of them take off after the Marine Life Institute truck that is transporting all these fish to Cleveland. So they take off, they find themselves at a bridge, and they team up with some adorable little sea otters to stop traffic so that Dory can break into the truck and try to get Mo and Marlin out. Once she, and it works perfectly, and once she gets in there, she is, gets Nemo and Marlin out, but she also doesn't stop there. She also is like, Hank, you have to get out of here. Actually, she might not have gotten Nemo and Marlin out. And she's like, Hank, I can't quite remember exactly, but it doesn't change the plot. Hank, you've got to get out of here. You've got to stop being so scared. Us meeting wasn't a coincidence, and the ocean is great, and we can be there together. And all of the fish start chanting the Marine Life Institute's third step, which is release. And they're like, release, release, release. And they're all like excited to get out. And so they're like, they kind of talk Hank into it. Hank's like, okay, fine, I'll do it. And they try to get out and the doors get shut and locked. And they're like, oh no, we're done. And he has another memory moment. They're like, there's always another way. And so they go out of the fire escape and Hank and Dory take over the truck and they're driving the truck all through traffic. And they eventually find themselves crashing it back into the ocean, releasing everybody and all the fish and themselves back into the ocean. Then from there, we return to the coral reef where everything is kind of happy and everybody's together. And Hank is now the substitute teacher. And Dory is practicing her memory skills, getting sharper. She's able to like stop and be like, I forgot. No, wait, what was I just doing? Why was I doing that? And she's getting stronger and a better memory. And she's able to like go off on her own in some areas without getting lost. And then Marlin and Dory at the end talking, where Marlin kind of has this relearn, re-remember, like Dory can be trusted. She's more capable than I give her credit for. And that's Finding Dory.
Good job, Josh. That was a lot of fun. This movie definitely has some low points, but overall, I think it's a pretty fun movie throughout. Dory, Finding Dory is came out in 2016, and it was directed by Andrew Stanton, written by Stanton and Victoria Strauss. Obviously, it is a sequel to Finding Nemo. Features some of the same voices coming back. Ellen DeGeneres is obviously back. Albert Brooks as Marlin is back. They did replace Nemo. I don't know if you knew that. While also adding in a few new voice casts: Ed O'Neill, Caitlin Olsen, Ty Burrell, Diane Keaton, and Eugene Levy. And also,
I'll say something in a second. Do you know, it's kind of an Easter egg, but do you know who, they did keep the original voice of Nemo. Do you know who he plays?
Oh, no, who?
He plays one of the truck drivers.
Oh, that's so cool. That's really cool.
Not the one who's driving the truck, but the other one, but they did keep him in it. The one who's like, oh, we're so going to get fired. That was the original Nemo.
That's really cool. That's awesome. Yeah, this movie focuses on Dory, obviously. It premiered at the El Capitan Theater in Los Angeles on June 8th, but it was released in the United States on June 17th. It had a budget of $175 million, and it made $1.029 billion worldwide. At the time, it became the third highest grossing film of 2016, the 22nd highest grossing film of all time, which I think it's probably lower now, and the fourth highest grossing animated film of all time during its theatrical run. It set tons of box office records, including the biggest opening for an animated film in North America. Definitely, it's 97 minutes long, and the music was done by Thomas Newman. I actually haven't looked up the let me look it up real quick. Rotten Tomatoes Finding.
That's interesting. So they kept the same director as Finding Nemo and the same music, so that was cool.
Yeah, for sure.
I like that move by Pixar. I've started really enjoying this, like connecting the dots of like who did what when.
Right.
So he also, Andrew Stanton directed Finding Nemo, but he also directed WALL-E, which is, I like seeing, now that we're kind of getting a bigger picture of all of the movies, how they played out. it's fun to see who did what, because you see why things are the way that they are a little bit more clearly.
Right.
So he's, those are the only ones that he's the director of, is Wally, Finding Nemo, and Finding Dory.
Right. I am very, very surprised with this Rotten Tomatoes score.
Is it, good?
It has a 94 on Rotten Tomatoes.
I get it. We'll get
for
into
sure.
it.
Yeah.
There's,
sure.
I'll give a spoiler here. I really only have two issues with this movie. And maybe it's really only, I really only have one issue with this movie. Only one. So.
All right. Well, why don't we go ahead and get into that and move on to our making our mark.
You've got to earn your mark by doing something big for something bigger than yourself. Someday you'll all make your mark, and I can't wait to see it.
I'm so excited to just dig into this movie after a month break. What do you have for general attraction?
So for general attraction, I have a 6, which is, you know, I'm going to bump that up to a 7 now, because I was trying to remember and I couldn't remember what I was feeling, but I actually remember being really excited, being pretty excited about the fact that there was going to be another Nemo related movie. I actually was not as down on it. I think that I had just seen Pixar make some really good sequels. I remember this is coming off of the tale of Monsters University, and I liked Monsters University a lot when I watched it. So I think I was actually generally pretty excited about it, but it also was still not quite back to where I was all in on Pixar again. So I was like, oh, it's going to be another good Pixar movie. And they're continuing on some Nemo stuff, and they're focusing on Dory. So that's cool.
Yeah, it was a 9 for me. I was pretty excited to get back into the world of Nemo. It was honestly something that I was really excited about. This is one of the first movies that, like, I vividly remember watching this movie in the theater. Others, I remember where I was. Like, I can remember back to the time, but, like, I actually vividly remember watching this this movie. And so I was excited for this movie to come out. And this is kind of maybe too inside baseball, but I remember when I was first going to watch this movie, Carly was working Sea Salt, but I was not. And so I went to visit her and watched it with the staff of Sea Salt that summer. And so it was half getting to see Carly after not seeing her for like a month, and then half seeing Finding Dory. So maybe that plays into my general attraction, but I was very really excited to watch this movie. Mm-hmm. So plot. I gave this movie's plot a 6. I enjoy this movie. I do. I like what happens in this movie, but too often I felt like it was just too convenient going scene to scene. I felt like it was
it have just I kinda rubbed off on you?
Yes, actually, unfortunately. But I feel like it just, like, there was a narrative, but the narrative felt like it was only there to explore the different parts of the aquarium, and it was really only just kind of jump to this, oh, get thrown here, get swim here. Like, it wasn't really, like, with Nemo there was a point and there was a progression to things, but with Dory I felt like it was just kind of jump here, oh, we're done.
That's a great way to describe it.
I liked each of the scenes. It just didn't feel like the progression was earned for me as much.
Yes. So for plot, I gave it a 5 for about the same reason, for the same exact reason. I like the story. I like the things. It's fun. It's a fun movie to watch, but the way that thing, I hate the execution. I love the idea of the movie, but I don't like the execution. Like you said, everything is Bug's Life to me. It's just, everything just happens and it shouldn't happen. Like, there's no reason anything should work the way that it does. The most perfect example is probably the scene that I forgot to mention, where Nemo and Marlin are launched by a fountain, where they cross, like, 50 to 75 yards of concrete as fish, unscathed just by launching themselves and being thrown by fountains. And it's just not realistic. Like, it doesn't make sense. And so the story that they tell is a great story. It's an incredible story. But the way that they tell it, as it does not age like most Pixar movies do. It's one that I look forward to showing Addie, but it's not one that I look forward to watching when I show Addie. Like, it's, I don't like the way things play out because it's not realistic and you can't believe it. But it is a fun story with a lot of incredible things it has to say, which we'll get into in a second.
For sure. Why don't we get into it now? Themes. What do you have for themes?
I gave it a 9 for themes. It's got one incredible strong one that comes forward, and then some. I don't really know if there's a lot of other background ones, but the main one is like overcoming like the adversity that's within, whatever it is that is like your shortcoming. Bailey and Dory, I think, are two of the strongest examples of it that I can think of, where they have specific disabilities that they are overcoming, that they're able to overcome, and they're able to not only just keep up with, but actually be more helpful, be stronger, and lead everyone else. And so it's that no matter what it is that you think is holding you back, you actually have the ability to be as good or stronger than and lead the people around you that you think are better than you.
Yeah, for sure. And I gave it a 10 for pretty much those same reasons. Plus the imagery of parenting kind of got me. I told Josh last night when I watched the movie, I sent him a text and I'm like, well, I cried during Finding Dory. Now that's new. And I feel like there are so many movies that I've done that with during this watch through that, one, I just maybe do them, but a lot of it has to do with just being a new dad. And so, yeah, I think just the imagery of parenting and what you would do for your kids, and what Jenny and Charlie did for Dory, and just never gave up hope. Like, I can't imagine. I mean, it's been years. They've just been moving seashells for years, and just the small chance that Dory would find one. And that is just so crazy and so cool. That I love that theme for sure. And like you said, no matter what disability you might have, you're capable. You can make it through. You can push through. Is really cool. So 10 for me.
Yeah, the family friends stuff I kind of like threw in there, that it was the strength of family, and also like the bond that can be between friends, and the
sure
familial yeah, that's, aspect that's, that can create.
That's another
was also there
piece to add for sure. All right, animation. I gave animation a 10. Watching through this movie was really beautiful. Like, I went back and looked at my score from Nemo, and I gave Nemo an 8. And it was cool in Nemo, but it was gorgeous in Dory. The water, there were some moments that like it just looked real. Like the water looked great. Like every single portion of this movie animation wise is just gorgeous. The animals all look cool, the people are look great, and like the water just the, and if you just gave me the scene of the open ocean exhibit, that would have been enough for me. That just that I one agree. Fish tank is just beautiful, man. It's so cool.
And they one thing that they nail in this that I don't even really remember what they did, but it definitely couldn't have been done this well, is the splashing into water, like the bubbles that fly out, and the visual that they have. Like, you feel way more underwater in this one than in Finding Nemo, and you felt perfectly underwater in Finding Nemo. And the splashing is like perfect. It is perfect. I gave it a 10 as well. The animation in this couldn't be better. I did say 9 originally for something that I don't like, but it's not worth a whole point. This so I took it away. It is.
What was the thing you don't like?
I hate Hank.
Really?
His movements don't make. I don't think his movements. Yeah, I don't think his movements make sense. And I definitely don't like the way that he's utilized. But that should not. His movements probably are realistic, knowing Pixar.
I'm glad that you took that away, because that is maybe the most I've ever disagreed with you in one of these things. I think Hank is a feat, like just a wow.
And we'll get. I hate Hank as a character and as a plot device. I don't hate Hank's animation as much as I just hate Hank.
Okay. I can live.
So
with
I was
animation wise. I don't know how you can say Hank is bad.
When I was watching, his movements looked weird, and the exact moment that I wrote that 9 was when he was climbing out of the truck, and I'm like, no way.
And honestly, like, an octopus outside of water couldn't happen. So like, they had to guess what his movements would be. So I get what you're saying, but I feel like they did phenomenally.
I took it away because it was just a bias of a different part of the movie leaking into its animation, which is perfect. It is phenomenal.
I have never done anything like that before. Mr. Incredible. So I can't say I agree. Just kidding. All right. Voice acting. What you got for voice acting?
I gave it a 10 because I love the new people that they brought in. I looked it up because I was curious about some of them, because sometimes there are people that I definitely should know and I didn't know. And so Destiny is voiced by Caitlin Olsen. You mentioned that. And I was like, Olsen, I know that. And I Googled it. Caitlin Olsen's not related to.
Yep, not one of those Olsens.
But her career, she's often mistaken for Elizabeth Olsen, which is either older sister, I think.
Elizabeth is she's not one of Scarlet Witch.
Okay. And so she's the younger sister twins, I believe. Mm-hmm. And her career lands like pretty much right in the time right after and during the Olsen twins like career. And so I'm sure that was constant in her life, was just that people thought she was related to the twins. She wasn't. She didn't really do a lot, so I didn't really care about her. But I thought that was fun to mention that she's not related to Mary Kate Ashley. The interesting thing to me was I caught it really quickly, and I never do this, but that Hank is voiced by Ed O'Neill,
yep.
Who plays Jay from Modern Family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I recognized it immediately because Hunter and I have been watching Modern Family, and we're in season 10 right now.
Isn't Ty Burrell, who plays Bailey, isn't he in that as well?
Yeah, I didn't catch that, which is why it's embarrassing. They're both from Modern Family. I didn't even catch that Ty Burrell, who plays Phil, who's one of the other main characters in the show. I 100% noticed and recognized Jay's voice, or Ed O'Neill's, but I didn't at all. And so when I was looking back up the character, like, Ty Burrell, oh, he's Phil. Oops. Edris.
Yep.
Elba,
yep,
that's plays Fluke, who is that's I know that you C-lands. Love. He's from Avengers. I don't remember his name.
He's Marvel.
Who is he?
A big. I can't even remember his name right now. I know it. I just can't remember it. But he's the guy, the like guy that sends the word down. I can't think of his name right now. But
Heimdall.
Heimdall. That's it. And so, yeah, he's one of the sea lions. The sea lions, they're not going to be my Woody's Roundup characters, but they very well could have been. They were
They're fun. Yeah, they're fun.
All right.
I didn't recognize the other guy who is one of them, but
yeah, me either.
Overall, like, the voice actors were pretty, I think they were perfect from the last one. I think I had said 10 in Finding Nemo. I think that you had said that pretty much perfect, except that Ellen took you out of it.
And so, it's the same thing, so I'm still a 9.
Yeah, I think it was perfect, and I thought the people they brought on, I love, because I'm currently watching the show that they're most famous for, and so I loved it.
Yeah. All right, John Ratzenberger quiz.
Figure it out, dude. I was trying to find it.
He disguises his voice. So you know when she is trying to psych herself up after she saw that her house, and there's these two crabs that are like cutting grass or whatever.
The ones who tell her
that she needs to go to
the
quarantine.
Tell her that the rest of the fish are in quarantine.
Yeah,
he's one of them.
He's the husband crab. He's the guy crab. But their voices are so high pitched that you would have never been able to.
This guy's voice gets me. I went back and I listened to the Velociraptors in The Good Dinosaur, and it doesn't even sound a little bit like him. Like, come on, how am I supposed to get this? He's messing with me.
That's it. All right, soundtrack. I gave it a five. I just didn't really like what they had to offer this time. Whereas Nemo, I felt like the music kind of went throughout.
Sorry.
I lost it a few times here. And just not a lot here for me this go around. So not bad, but just nothing stuck out.
Thomas, you're no Randy. I gave it a seven. It's fine. It does its job. So there's nothing incredible about it like there is in Finding Nemo. But I don't think you even liked Finding Nemo that much. But
I didn't.
I had moments that I loved about Finding Nemo. I don't have any of them in this. So,
right, seven. Characters. Characters. What you got for characters?
Zach, this is where I'm conflicted.
Okay.
Because I really love Dory in this movie.
And see, that's where
I really love Nemo. And I really love Destiny. And I really love Becky. And I really love the sea lions. And I really, 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 really hate Hank. And I really hate Bailey. But I mostly hate Hank.
Why do you hate
Hank? And I also hate Marlin.
Explain your hate for Hank before you give your score.
Okay. My hate for Hank is because, one, they don't create a character for him. They just make him he is just the device that is carrying Dory around. And all that you know about him is he doesn't want to go to the ocean. You don't know why. They don't care to explain why. They don't give him any depth. And he is used completely, I'll say inappropriately, because it doesn't make sense. What he does doesn't make any sense. He does things that make this movie completely unrealistic. Controlling a stroller just because he's got tentacles, being able to grab stuff, drinking coffee, like it's just weird, it doesn't make any sense. And I 100% get why like a child would overlook it and like Hank, but what they wanted to do in this movie is they wanted to explore two things. They wanted to explore an aquarium because they've already nailed down the ocean. There's nothing else to do in the ocean. The one time that they tried to do something in the ocean, it was reminiscent of the first movie. Yeah. So they've nailed down the ocean. They can't really do that anymore. So they've got to go somewhere else. They go to an aquarium and they look at stuff on the surface. Well, how do you do that with fish? You have to have something that moves the fish around. And so they go with an octopus. And I just think that they get to explore a new area and animate above water more, but it just forced into this movie in a way that's completely unrealistic and that makes the movie move in a way that I really don't like. So that's why I don't like Hank.
Okay. Interesting. I understand where you're coming from. I don't necessarily agree on all those points. But I do understand where you're coming from. And so to say all of that, where are you landing with your score?
I'll add in the one other point. Sure. Because I do think there are a lot of really good characters in this. So, but Hank makes me, Hank is, I can't stand his character or his use in the movie. So that's like tanks the score big time. But Dory is incredible. Destiny is incredible. And Nemo is incredible. All of the fish that are like the underdogs, the ones that aren't expected to be able to kind of keep up or do things correctly, are my favorite characters in this movie. Bailey, I don't like because of the same reason. The only purpose that Bailey serves is to basically create a 3D layout of the world like a Batman drone, which is, I don't know much about echolocation, but I'm fairly certain you wouldn't be able to see that much, that far, that detailed. It's that you can see above on land where a truck is driving. Like it's just entirely unrealistic. And I don't like, and I also can't stand Marlin because they do what we hate with main characters from the first movie where they dumb them down.
Yeah. Let me talk about Marlin. Cause that's where my score is going to go.
I'll just say I don't like Marlin. But I like a lot of the other characters. It would kind of even out to a five, but I dislike Hank so much and his entire use in the movie that it knocks it down to a four.
Okay. So I really just kind of focused on two big portions, and that's Dory and Marlin. I like all the side characters. I don't really have a gripe with any of them. And so Dory's journey is so good. I feel like they did what Cars 2 was trying to do better. And I feel like lifting up the dumb but lovable sidekick. I know I probably shouldn't call Dory dumb, but that's kind of the same mold between her and Mater. But I feel like they did her journey a lot better than Mater's, of like proving he's capable. They proved that both were capable. Just the way they did Dory's was a little bit better. And her just trying to actually figure things out on her own. And she used other people, and that was just a really cool, just really inspiring, honestly. But Marlon just, it just proved that he learned absolutely nothing from the first movie. And like you said, we get so frustrated with that, because I feel like the same thing happened to Lightning in Cars 2, but it's just so frustrating that the whole first movie is about him believing that Dory and Nemo really, but and Dory are capable. Like, that's literally the point of the whole entire first movie. And now your plot device for Marlon and like what he does is, oh, she just is dumb and forgets all the time. Like, is that really where you're going to go with your character that literally grew the most in the last movie? Is just put him right back to the bottom where he was? Yeah, he didn't really do much with Nemo, but he learned it about Dory as well in the movie. And so it's just so frustrating to see that a character that I love from the first movie just literally just be pushed to the side and thrown right back to where he was at the beginning. It's just, honestly, it's so frustrating.
To add to that, he treats all of the, like, everything around him the way that he does at the beginning of the first movie, where he treats Becky like she's incompetent, though he's learned that things are, or he's supposed to have learned that things are a lot more capable than you tend to give them credit for.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And so it's just, I just don't like it. The character of Marlon just, it's so frustrating. Let's move on to something a little bit more, more uplifting, I guess, humor. I gave it an 8. I know you, by judging your face, yours is going to be a little bit lower, but there were multiple times that I laughed out loud to this movie. You can ask Carly. Maybe I was just in a good mood last night. I don't know, but it is really, I wrote down some of the funniest moments. Let me find them. So some of my favorite moments were, I remember it like it was yesterday, although I don't remember yesterday all that well. I thought that was hilarious.
That's a good joke.
When she's helping, or quote unquote helping, Mr. Ray with the class, and she forgets what she's talking about, and then Nemo goes, or she goes, "What was I talking about?" And Nemo goes, "Mommies and daddies," and she goes, "Oh
yeah,
that kind of class." I was not expecting And this, I feel like you at least have to appreciate this, when throughout the whole movie, they've been hiding Hank in ridiculous ways, and she sees the coral and is like, "Oh, there's Hank." And so she swims up to it, and it's not him. He's literally just hiding behind it. I thought that was so funny, because throughout the whole movie, he's been hiding as like a plant. He's been hiding as this, as like a post. But then when he actually could have hid like a coral, he's literally just behind it.
He just curled up in a ball behind it. Right. That is funny.
And so, let's see. the pearl / clam that Nemo and Marlon find, that talks about his dating life and he hasn't seen people in months, and how he dated Shelley. That, I thought that was really funny. I like Bailey, spoiler alert. And so when he is finally gets into the ocean and he starts talking, he's like, "Oh yes, my beautiful gift." Woo-hoo. I think that's so funny. So I liked it. I gave it an 8. I laughed out loud so many times during this movie. And if that is going to happen, I gotta give it a high score. So, but it sounds like you're not going to. So go ahead.
I'll give it to you. The moments that you mentioned, some of them were pretty funny, and I kind of just forgot about them when I was going through it. but I some of them I didn't, some of them they didn't land for me, the ones that you were mentioning, and I don't really remember any outside of it. I'm giving it a 6. It's not,
oh, that's not bad.
Terrible. There are some situations that are funny, but it's not, I didn't really find myself laughing at any point. There's some situations that are funny. Dory does find herself making some good moments, but it, I didn't laugh. And so if I don't laugh, I can't give it a great one, especially considering some of the movies that have made me bust out laughing. So I gave it a 6.
I can live with that for sure. All right.
Yeah, not overly critical, but not like incredible.
Yeah. All right. Easter eggs. What'd you give Easter eggs?
I gave it a 6. I really was not impressed with the Easter eggs in this movie, especially even going back and like looking at some other stuff. They did a good job, maybe too good in my opinion, with the staple 3, maybe just with the Pizza Planet truck. I knew, so like when I couldn't find it, but when I went back and looked up where it was, I knew exactly where to look. I was looking in the right spot, but I just couldn't find it. So I felt good about myself in that I at least know how I can kind of, I get an instinct now where I can kind of tell where Pixar is going to try to pull something off. So, but the Luxo ball being the horn, A113 was the license plate, which is standard for them, but they also had it on the Sea Lion's tags. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is, that's, if it was only on the tags, I would have been like, that's way too hard to find. But the fact that it was on the license plate adds to the kind of like tradition of putting it on a license plate. But then Pizza Planet truck being hidden in the wreckage of that first sunken ship, I was looking around, I was like, this seems like the place where they would try to hide the the Pizza Planet truck, but I couldn't find it. Even watching the video, I couldn't quite tell that it was the Pizza Planet truck, but I get it. The staple 3 are fine, but really there wasn't much else past that that wasn't like deep dive stuff.
There were two big ones that I found just online. I didn't see them throughout. I knew one of them just because I think people hyped it up when the movie was originally coming out. But one that I didn't know about was that when Dory is talking to Hank, like when they first meet, there's a poster in the background of Darla holding a fish.
Yep.
And then the big
the
one
picture.
The big one is that when the person is talking about Destiny, right before you meet Destiny, there is a person that is in the crowd, and it's Riley from Inside Out.
Oh yeah.
And so that's, I thought really that was pretty cool. So I gave it a 7. Not much better than what you gave it, just because some of them were just kind of okay, but a 7 for me. Ending. I feel like this is going to be another place of gripe for you, just so out of what I know about you, and I might be wrong, but
So I'll go first, and then you can finish it off nicer.
No, I gave it a 3. I gave it a 3. It's my lowest grade yet. The ending of this movie is weird, dude. I can handle weird. As you've known throughout this whole list, the moments that Josh is like, that's just so unbelievable, it's too weird, like it just doesn't make sense, I've been like, yeah, but Josh, it's a movie. Like I've always been that guy, but this one's just really weird. Like the truck scene is just a bit too much, if I'm being completely honest. It's not horrible, but it's just goofy. Like the rest of the movie is like an uplifting, like you can do anything. I just didn't think they'd go the extra mile and be like, you can drive a truck, or like, it's just like, it just doesn't make sense that
only need 7 legs to drive a truck.
Exactly. And so I don't even really have much to say about it other than it's just weird. Like it ends well. Everybody going back to like the coral reef where Marlin and Nemo live, that part of the ending is pretty cool. But the whole ending of saving, Nemo and Marlin, and then ultimately Hank and Dory, just it's just kind of weird for the rest of the movie. So I gave it a 3.
I have 2 issues with the ending. First of all, no. Second of all, it's not even the first time in the movie that they do this dumb thing. If I didn't believe that an octopus and a fish could a stroller around an aquarium, what makes you think I'm going to believe they can drive a car through traffic?
My problem with it isn't even believing that it could happen. It's just, it's weird.
It's is so weird. It's a police chase scene with an octopus and a fish driving a moving truck. I can't tell you how much I can't stand it. I gave it a one, and I actually gave it a little bit more, and I realized that was entirely too generous. And I went back on it because there's a lot of redeeming qualities and moments in this movie, and the ending has none of them. I don't think everything that I like about this movie is not relevant and isn't really present in the ending. And everything that I dislike about the movie is perfectly displayed in the ending. And it's why whenever I think about Finding Dory, I think so negatively about this movie. And actually, I was talking about this with Hunter yesterday, that endings, the way that things end can color your opinion of something entirely.
For sure.
She was talking about a conversation she had with a friend where their family was on vacation. And at the very end of the vacation, when coming back through customs, it was like a really hard, like 15 minutes that like they made a few mistakes on some documents, and it was like miserable 15 minutes. And everybody was like, that was the worst trip I've ever had. It was a terrible weekend. It's like, no, let's go back. That was an incredible vacation. We had a bad 15 minutes, and it changed the way we thought about the whole week. Sure. And when I think of Finding Dory, I think of this scene, which I hate with a burning passion. But when we watch the movie, there's so many great things, and there's so many great moments, and I don't want to let this ending ruin this movie for me. The ending is so unrealistic. It's so unbelievable. It's so weird. And not only is like these things shouldn't happen, they also do things that definitely shouldn't happen. They jump from an off ramp onto an on ramp and have no issues and drive perfectly fine. Like there's so many, just like every bit of it, I'm like, I can't stand that. I can't believe they're doing that. And it shouldn't change. This scene should not stop people from watching this movie, and it shouldn't make, it will no longer be make me say that this is a terrible movie. I'll just say that there's a terrible character in the movie and there's a dumb ending, but it's overall, it's a great movie with an ending that is so weird.
All right. So Josh, I have the rankings all put in. And so we have Josh scored it at a 65. And Zach scored it at a 73, which brings it to a 69, which is tied with A Bug's Life for us, which I think is about right. And so
where does that put it? Is that at the bottom or is it mid bottom?
So I'll just go through and list them. It puts it not at bottom. Cars 2 is still our bottom. But it's right there. And so at number one right now, we have Inside Out, Toy Story 3 at 2, Up at 3, Toy Story 2 at 4, Nemo, which it's a whole 20 points almost exactly 20 points Nemo's ahead, which is pretty interesting. Monsters, Inc. at 6, Toy Story, Cars, Incredibles, Monsters University, WALL-E, Ratatouille, Brave, Good Dinosaur, Bug's Life, and Dory are tied, so we can put them in whatever order we want, and then Cars 2 bringing up the rear. And so it's right near the bottom. And if I'm being honest, I feel like that's about right. It's a good movie. It's a good Pixar movie. It's just, there are definitely flaws which would bring it down. And so I feel like that is kind of a good place for it to land.
Yeah, I think that this one lands where most Pixar movies don't, which is it's a great movie to show your kids, but it's not going to be as much fun for you to watch.
That makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. All right. Anything else before we move on?
Nope.
All right, let's move on to Woody's Roundup. Josh, who is your favorite character from Finding Dory?
My favorite character is probably Dory, but I don't love her so much that I'm willing to break the rule. Because there's a few other characters that I really love, and I'm going to go with a real left field option here that I just really admired their role, and I did not appreciate their underappreciation, and it's Becky. I really enjoyed Becky. Becky was a brilliant, weird loon.
I'm going to be honest. I could have guessed maybe 15 characters before I would have got to Becky for you.
Honorable other mentions would be Destiny and Dory. And that's about it. I mean, I really like those three characters in this movie. I just decided to say Becky because it's probably the least expected and it's out of left field. And Becky's a fun character.
You're not going to like this, but my favorite character isn't Hank. So you don't have to be like so mad at me.
I swear. No, I already saw this coming because you teased it a minute ago.
But it's Bailey. I think he is so funny. I know you don't like it. I think your hang up is just the echolocation's not super realistic. And I think that's where you get hung up. But if you look over that, he has a lot of funny lines and just somebody who's in the Marine Life Institute who thinks that he's broken, but he's really not, is kind of funny to me as well. And so I had a lot of fun with Bailey this time. Going in, I probably would have said that Hank was my favorite character. But throughout, I did kind of see some of the things that you were talking about. And I feel like he was the person just kind of going place to place, which didn't make sense. So I land on Bailey.
I understand that. Least favorite?
I think people already know what we're going to say. Mine's Marlon. I kind of talked about it already, and so I don't really even feel like I need to go on. But his character from the first to this movie just...
It's so dumb. He's so good. Anyways, I hate Hank. I hate Hank.
Oh, really?
If we made t-shirts, I'd have a t-shirt that says, I hate Hank. I have an honorable mention, and it's Bailey's echolocation. I'm not going to take Bailey down, but I actually kind of like Bailey. You're right. Bailey's funny. I love Phil from Arrested Development, so I also like Bailey for that. I just don't like the plot devices that are unrealistic. But Bailey, I have no issues with Bailey as a character. Just the echolocation. But I hate Hank.
All right, let's move on to 22.
It is an honor having you prepare 22 for Earth.
I'm going to make you wish you never died.
Zach, if you could this movie but do it in a way that you like better, what would be like two Yikes. Of the things you would change? Just you get one thing. Let's just say you get one thing you can change. What would you do?
See, here's the thing, and I think it would be Marlon. I know I don't feel like you needed to tear he didn't need to tear Dory down for her to continue her journey. I feel like Pixar thought that they needed to tear her down to like bring her up, but that's not even it. Like, she already had so many obstacles that like having all her friends at her disposal could have been still a good part of the story. And so maybe just Marlon taking his growth and actually bringing it to this movie, which wouldn't have changed that much because the movie's not about him. It's not about his growth. But they try to shoehorn more of his growth in. And so I think that's just... That's it. What about you?
So I have two. The first thing is I wouldn't make this movie.
Right.
Because Finding Nemo is so perfect and they explored the entire ocean so perfectly that the entire thing that this movie, the problems I have this with movie is they're trying to overcome and they're trying to tell the story while being fact that they don't want to completely remake the first one.
Right.
So the first thing is like, I think the first one's so good that it almost makes making this one really hurt it. But that's not my actual answer. If I were to remake it, I would just remove Hank, the character, and I wouldn't use him. I would use somebody that understands the pipes and have them navigate through the aquarium through the pipes. Fish do through water instead of trying to force a way for them to be able to move around on land. Just have whoever the Hank type character, just have it be somebody who thinks they understand the pipes but doesn't and keeps accidentally getting them lost because they don't really know where they're going. That'd be kind of what I would do.
That makes sense. Do you feel like out of all Pixar's, we've at least gotten through most of the sequels we're going to hit now? We've really only got one more, like first sequel. There's obviously Cars 3 that we're going to talk about next week. But do you feel like this series, so Nemo, was, or what do you feel like Pixar's least needed sequel that they actually did was? Is it this? Is it Cars? Is it Monsters? Is it Toy Story? Or is it The Incredibles?
I think the least, they explore new themes the least in Monsters. So probably that. Toy Story 3 is so good, and I like Cars 3 so much that I can kind of get past Cars 2 to get to Cars 3. And I like,
I'm not even really asking like which ones did you like and which ones didn't you like, but after the first one, which series do you feel like needed a sequel the least?
Because
in my opinion,
I wanted to be sure.
It is Nemo, I think.
Yeah, I wanted to be sure because I was kind of debating with back with Monsters, but I mean, and maybe Cars, because I don't think the Cars world needed to be explored more either. But Finding Nemo is so widely explored already that there's just nothing more to explore. There's more character to talk about, but there's no, they nailed it with, yeah. They nailed it already with Finding Nemo.
I think so too. I think Nemo is the answer. And like, I would say Incredibles is the one I cared about the least, but it's a story about superheroes. Like, you can always tell more stories about superheroes. And so like, it's that is not the answer for the question I just asked. And so, okay.
Yeah. I also disagree with that slight sentiment. Just, I want to say it because I anticipated and was excited for Incredibles 2 for like my entire childhood. So,
right. Okay. So I've got a question. How bad of a day is it for the Marine Life Institute? How many people do you think got fired? Like, just two of their biggest animals like escaped. Like, that is,
I think no one was fired. And you know why? I think that those tanks were designed that way on purpose. I think they were meant to be free willied. I think that the whole point is that once these whales are ready, they can, you know what?
There's no way.
That's dumb theory. If watching it, it felt like that was kind of the point, that when they're ready to be released, they'll be released. But I think that they're designed that way, so that way they can just kind of like lift the glass and
that's what it is.
They can be free. So everyone that works in the whale department, the transportation to Cleveland department,
definitely the two drivers for sure. They even said we're totally fired.
Work in the kids and the people who work in the kids zone. I think all of those people got fired or written up that day.
Yeah, that was bad.
Definitely the whale people got fired.
A bad day. All right. Do you have another one, or you want me to move on to my next one?
Your next one.
All right, so you kind of mentioned this, and it has a little bit to do about the Pixar theory, but I there was a scene when Marlin and Nemo are in like a fish tank, and they are getting ready to go across the thing that you said you didn't like with a little the spurt, and there is a toy fish that is in there with them, and so there's a toy fish in there with him, and it keeps bumping into Marlin a few times. And then at the end, once Nemo's like, what would Dory do? It actually bumps on the edge of the glass, pointing the direction that that they would need to go. Do you believe that this is an actual alive toy that is trying to help Marlin and Nemo?
Because it is behaving in the way that a lot of the toys that can't talk do in the Toy Story movies, where it like kind of just points, bounces, uses its toy mannerisms that it's capable of doing to communicate. And that's what it feels like it's doing right there. So I definitely like the, sometimes I can't buy into the Pixar theory, but in this one I definitely can. And I like the crossover feel.
For sure. All right, Josh, why don't we move on to our core memory?
But the really important ones are over here. I don't want to get too technical, but these are called core memories.
All right, Josh, what is your core memory for Finding Dory?
It is, there's a few things in this that we gave perfect scores, that we gave great scores to, but the best score was sports animation. And I think we both can agree that the best moment for the animation was when Dory is dropped in the open ocean exhibit. And that's my core memory, which is that moment where she's dropped in and you just get to see this beautiful, the beautiful exhibit, which has this feeling like the first movie where you see like the coral reef and you see all the fish swimming and it has the beautiful music. That you get that exact same feeling, but with a brand new beautiful scene from this movie with animation that's even better than the first one. So it's even more beautiful with more fish moving around. And so it's a wonderful moment, and it's what stands out as like the best part that will stick in my mind in this movie.
I debated what I was going to do, and I'm going to give an honorable mention to the parent scene of them finding Dory, but that's not what I'm going to pick. I thought that's what I was going to pick, and you're going to hate this, but I'm going to pick the truck scene. It's the thing that I remember when I remember this movie. And so it is the thing that sticks with me. It's the thing that will constantly stick with me when I think about this movie. And I have
so
no
this
clue.
Is a core memory that's like an anger core memory
potentially
or a sadness core memory.
Right. And so it's not a good one, but it is the thing that sticks with me, and it is memorable. You can't say that it's not memorable. Like it is the thing that sticks with you. And so I did not plan on doing that until the second before I started talking, but I feel like that's my core memory for this one. So
there it is.
Yeah. All right, man. That's Finding Dory. Any other pieces, any kind of different parts of anything? I do want to say, and I meant to say this back when I was talking about Marlin, but the juxtaposition of Marlin and Charlie and how they both deal with their child who has a disability is ridiculous. Jenny and Charlie, Dory's parents, are like the most kind, most patient. Like they are willing to do anything and everything, like just to nurture and just be there for Dory. Whereas Marlin in both movies is like, oh yeah, well, you can't do that. I'll protect you. Like I'll do it. But Jenny and Charlie were like, you can do it. And I think that is such a difference between the two parents in this movie that I didn't want to go unmentioned.
Yeah, that's definitely a great point. And I definitely agree. I wish they wouldn't have like gone back and made you dislike Marlin to prove that, to make that right. point even more like noticeable. But it is a very good point.
And so, all right, Josh, I think that is it for Finding Dory. It's near the bottom of our list right now, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad movie. In fact, it means it's a good movie. Yeah. All right, man. What do we have coming up next?
It's Cars 3.
Cars 3, yes. Our second threequel, I guess you would call it. Not really. The third installment of a Pixar movie that we've got yet. And so I'm excited about Cars 3. Cars 2 is the bottom of our list right now, but I feel like, and we'll have to watch it to remember, but I feel like Cars 3 did what Cars 2 maybe should have done. And so I think it'll definitely be higher, but we'll just have to see how much higher. And so I'm excited about that. All right, Josh. We will probably pick up the pace a little bit if we can. I know we've been kind of busy in September, but I feel like we can catch up, and so we'll definitely be on the lookout for more podcasts a lot faster than at least a month. And so be ready for that. All right, Josh, how can the people contact us?
They can follow us on the socials at Lampstomp, and they can email us at lampstomp@gmail.com.
For For sure. And so we would love to hear from you guys. Sorry it's been so long, but now we are back on schedule. We are back on the groove and we are ready. We'll see you with Cars 3 very soon. Peace.